I'll call the meeting to order and would entertain a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Representative McFarland moves that the minutes be approved, and I would just say that the staff has informed us that we need an oral amendment right after the roll call where it says a quorum was present. Representative Morgan moved that the minutes of, instead of March 27th, I know this is a very fast session, but it should be February 12th. So with that oral 2008, oh boy, we're slow instead of fast. Okay, with that oral amendment, Representative McFarland renewed the motion. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And members, before we go into our agenda, Representative Dominguez has got information on the memorial service for Jim Pearson, who I know a lot of people who have been around here longer than this term know very well, and it's who died last week. It's Saturday, February 23rd at 10:30 a.m. at the, followed by lunch with family, friends, and colleagues at the Colonial Park Church, which is 5532 Wooddale Avenue South in Edina. And in lieu of flowers, memorials are preferred to the Jim Pearson Governmental Relations Scholarship at Achieve Minneapolis, which is the, is that the Minneapolis School District office? Anyway, I'm going to leave the, and it says teachers may send checks to the MST office. So I will, we'll have this information with the staff if anybody wants to get it. And we certainly remember Jim Pearson with many smiles and memories. All right. Today, we are going to hear the last of our bonding bills. And then afterwards, as you will recall, we're going to have every member rate them. And our staff has decided that rather than use stars and circles, as we talked about at one time, you're all going to get a check sheet where you can rate things as high priorities, medium priorities, or low priorities. And you can rate everything high, everything low, everything medium, or anything in between. And then we will share the results with you tomorrow when we have our full bonding bill that we'll vote out of this committee tomorrow. So, with that, we'll start out our first bill today is Representative Brown. And you are on this committee, so you can move your own bill when you make it up there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 2807 to, what am I?
Representative Brown moves House File 2807 for inclusion in the K-12 bonding recommendation.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. House File 2807 is a bill requesting funds to Alden so that they can build a community center. And what I'm going to do is introduce Superintendent Joe Guanella, and he will describe the project for us.
Welcome, Superintendent Guanella. Please restate your name and then go for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joe Guanella, I'm the superintendent, principal. I teach some, coach, and do drivers at Alden Cogger, so you get an idea how small we are. I call this one the Accidental Project. It started over 2 years ago with the school meeting science space. So I started twirling away some money to be able to do that in a few years. And then one of our local businessmen who was in failing health started giving us money and bequeathing us money. And by the time that was all said and done, he had given us over $300,000 to build a community fitness center. So it started out with myself taking a look at that project and with the community money. And okay, how do we proceed? And it seems to be a fairly small, straightforward project. Then the city came on board and said, our 1920 building is not adequate. We need to do something about city offices. Are you interested in talking to us about coming in? Okay, we can have that discussion too. So now I've got the city, community donation, and the school, and a project that went from a few thousand square feet to 15,000. And then the idea was brought forward last summer to see if it would be part of the bonding bill to do some good things for a small rural community. That's really, in a nutshell, how we got here.
Thank you very much. And we did hear, I heard at least from some of the bonding committee members, that you had quite a tour for them when they went down there with lots of community support.
Yes, community support for us is just astounding. We passed another bond bill, another bonding vote back in 96 with an 83% yes vote. So our folks are pretty supportive of what we do there. In fact, I like to tell people that come in to tour our school to be ready, because they'll see three-year-olds in my building, and they will see 80-year-olds in my building. And that's just the way it is, and they better get used to it.
And the way it should be. Any questions from members? Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Brown, our senior testifier, why the verb may in line 10 may include educational program space? And I'm sorry, I was at another meeting, so I missed your presentation. Is this going to be more health fitness than it is classroom type?
Superintendent Granella?
There's multiple components to it. There's a 1,500 square foot science room.
Oh.
There's 1,800 square feet for early childhood family education.
Okay.
$2,200 square feet for a community fitness center. Again, that's a 24/7 operation. And then city offices are in for roughly 220 square feet. And then there's a multi-purpose space that the city and the school can use. So we can put a muster or will or...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I should ask council then, is this typically what we do, is we use may to give them flexibility? Or I just don't understand why it's may and not must.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, often on bonding bills we won't, and this is of course a matter of choice for you as legislators, but often on bonding bills we'll state the purposes for which the money can be used. For example, as you see on lines 1-7 and 1-8, about designing and constructing, but just other than that, not prescribing the project at all. One problem we tend to find is that a group will come in and have an idea, we'll put too many words in, and then they'll say, oh, by the way, we changed that, we're not having a science room, now we're doing this or that. So the general shape of the bill when it emerges from the House Bonding Committee tends to be less specific on the nature of the project, although it will comment on whether it's design, pre-design, or construction activities.
Any other questions? Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is this is asking for $950,000. How many total dollars is the project? How much have you raised so far, and how much do you still have to go?
The total project is $2.2 million.
Any other questions or any comments or testimony from the audience? Okay, hearing none, we will lay House File 2807 over for inclusion in the K-12 bonding recommendation bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Shumper.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. I'll move House File 31184, inclusion in the K-12 recommendations, to the bonding committee. Representative Shumper.
Thank you. Members, this is a request by the School District of Rushford Peterson for a cooperative facilities grant assistance. You should have several handouts. I think you have a green folder there that lays out the Rushford plan pretty well. I think there's an article there from the Minnesota State High School League that talks about the damage done to the school's district during the flood. Many of you, or some of you may not be, because I certainly wasn't aware of this cooperative facilities grant program, but basically it provides bonding money to school districts that are really having a difficult time building new facilities. It's been used several times in the last 10 or 15 years, and Rushford is a district that has a large number of low-income students and a low adjusted net tax capacity. And here to help me make the presentation is our school superintendent, Chuck Ehlers, and our school board president, John Nechetsky. So, Amy?
Welcome, Superintendent Ehlers and Mr. Nechetsky, and I take it the superintendent is going first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon to enlist your help to invest in the future of our school district as well as our communities in the southeastern section of the great state of Minnesota here. I had the pleasure of interviewing for the Rushford Peterson job in early June and made the move to the Rushford Peterson district.
Wow.
Started my job on July 9th. 6 months ago from today's date, Rushford and surrounding communities were, as you well know, part of a natural disaster in which heavy rain fell over several days, and our school district became an evacuation center. And if you look on the very back page of your green booklet here this afternoon, you will see the effects of the floodwaters that were taking place. And this was taken at approximately about 7 a.m. On the morning of August 19th. We are here this afternoon to enlist your help in helping us make a full recovery for that and to make an investment not only in our school district and for our families and our children in our district, but also for the state of Minnesota as well. We consider this a prime opportunity for the state of Minnesota to step forward, as they have already, in assisting the community of Rushford, and now we have the opportunity to ask you to help us as a school district to move forward and into the 21st century here with modern facilities. The current facilities we have a mixed mass of buildings, and there is a photograph in your booklet here. It's on the fourth page in. You will see that our original high school was built in 1906 with additions in 1936, 1957, and 1970. And as well, we have a center that is located in Peterson that currently houses our middle school students, grades 6 through 8. The unique thing about the flood is that it opened our eyes to some structural issues that the Board of Education as well as the community was aware of. Those varied all the way from air quality issues to just general structural concerns for the building. And as a result of having to tear interior walls out and get down to the basic foundation of our building, we discovered that there are some structural concerns that we have. Even with the help and the assistance of structural engineers who assured us that the building is not in fear of falling down, there is concerns, though, futuristically for our building. It has also reached a point that it is no longer feasible for us to invest in repairs or avenues to refurbish the building. When we're all said and done, we will still be sitting on an old foundation. We will be sitting on a busy highway and with no green space and no parking facilities. So we have, as a district, and the Board of Education has been very cooperative in assisting with this in moving forward, coming up with additional sites, and on page one you'll see that we have some proposed new sites for our facility. And we feel that with an investment into our district, that you will be sustaining our school district and our community for many, many years to come. In addition, we will be supporting the local businesses as they continue their efforts to recover from the flood, and as well assisting them in attracting new jobs and new industries into our community. As I indicated, we also feel that this is going to provide an economic boost and will allow us and the state to take advantage of low interest rates at the current time. And we're excited to be able to provide some new learning opportunities for our students. We currently are not able to provide for 54% of our younger population, and that would be ages 3 through 5. So we have a real need in our community. Our current facilities limit our space, and so there is a huge need there, and we would like to be able to through this new addition and new building is to provide for those children of our community as well. We have taken the liberty today to put together with Ehlers and Associates an analysis of the tax impact for our community. I have with us today Gary Olson from Ehlers and Associates, and if you have questions or concerns as you look at that, he will be able to assist us in answering any questions or concerns that you have in that regard this afternoon. Also with us today is Gary Benson. Gary Benson is working with ICS Consulting, and they have been instrumental in helping us put together some preliminary plans as to a way to handle our current situation and to look futuristically on what our needs are for our school district. So at this time, I would entertain any questions or concerns by you, the committee, and also invite you to allow Board President John Netsky to share as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Ehlers. Am I pronouncing this right? I thought I heard, is it Netsky?
It's Netsky.
Netsky. What yes. nationality is that?
It's Polish.
There you go. No wonder I couldn't.
I'm from Wisconsin originally.
Okay.
So forgive me for that.
I forgot
all
the last letters,
didn't I? Yeah. That's right. There's an S and a W and a J and a few of those in there too at one time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to us today. There is a list of pictures flowing around somewhere up there,
mm-hmm.
and when it comes around to you, when you have a chance to take a look at it, keep in mind that we compiled that photo list as a way for you to take a look at what was behind the walls. The best time of that was when they were ripped out, obviously, from the floods, and we had a good chance of good ability to see what our structure looks like behind the walls. So as you're looking through those photos, please don't spend too much time looking at the mud and dirt and the water, but more of the hallways, how narrow the narrowness of the hallways, and how we're really locked in as far as our current facilities with regards to the cement walls and some of the foundation work that you'll see in those pictures. So thank you for looking at that. As Mr. Ehler mentioned, we're very proud to have Mr. Ehler on board. It's been a long process for us to find a superintendent, and he's been thrown into the fire with RP. Hadn't been with us for barely over a month, and we had a complete disaster on our hands. Within 2 weeks, we're very proud of the fact that school opened on time, which was a real tribute to the staff and the people in our area to bring the school back on time. Along with that, I just wanted to give you an idea. For us, timelines in Rushford right now, it's Rushford and Peterson, the community area, is post-flood and pre-flood. That's basically the way we talk about time these days. You'll see in the numbers in the front page there that the free and reduced lunch rates for our district pre-flood was about 37%, 37 to 38%. At this current time right now, we're at 58%. So that has jumped dramatically for us in our district, and we are trying to get together and do what we can trying create a boost for our local economy and for the state as well. So that is why we're here today, and we're also here to answer your questions. So at this point, do you have any questions of us?
I think we probably will. Representative Swale.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for coming. All of us were very supportive of your community after the flood occurred, and you have a real champion with Representative Trumper. So congratulations on having him around. I am concerned when I see the walls, because my eyes are drawn to that immediately. And where are your students currently being housed? Have they been moved to temporary facilities? Where are you educating them?
Superintendent Ehlers.
Thank you.
When the waters, and really for us, the floodwaters damaged some of our shop areas and some of our lower areas in our elementary building, but most of the damage that occurred in our building was on the lower level, and that was from sewer backup. We were fortunate that we could close that area off, and by moving some of our staff and students around. An example of that would be our elementary and high school vocal music classes have been in 5 different areas since the start of school. She has been a real trooper for us and moved 5 different times.
Mm-hmm.
So during this whole process, we were able to lock off that area, and the construction process has just been completed, and less than a week ago we were able to move our students and open that area back up
for usage again.
Madam Chair, when these walls are opened and you did air quality testing, were there any significant particles in the air that like asbestos, or was there intense mold or things like this that might cause health issues for the students?
That's a very good question. Yes, there was. Fortunately for us, there was no asbestos issues. The exterior walls, though, were covered in black mold, and we were fortunate to remove all of those areas and then work with the State Health Department as well as our own consultants in drying the air down. We had a large dehumidifier unit that came in and dried the building down, and we have had dehumidifiers running ever since, and we have gotten a clean bill of health before we allowed our students and staff back into that area. You're welcome.
We have a couple more people. I'm going to ask one first. How many bonds, how recently have you attempted bonds for your buildings? And they must not have passed, but what was the timeline and the number and the frequency? Mr.
Netchie will be happy to answer that question. Won't you, Mr. Netchie?
That was before I was on the board, but I was a part of the district at that time. As a matter of fact, I was on the public speaking committee for the last referendum. That was in, I believe, November of 2002. And it was roughly an 85-15 vote against a new facility. We've learned a lot since then, and we know of many areas that we've really made some mistakes in that first referendum pass. For example, in that first pass, we had planned for a K-12 facility, one facility in one area. That left out the Peterson area. For all the folks that surround around the Peterson area, that left them completely out of the mix. So that was one big mistake that we had. The other mistake that we made was more of a timing issue. The district had just recently, the year before, approved an operating levy increase. The first tax bill for that increase came in just before the referendum vote. So there was a lot of confusion internally by the district members and those kind of things that they were confused as to what are we voting for now when we just had this increase and we had in excess of a number of hundreds of dollars per household for an operating levy increase. So the timing was horrible. There are a number of other reasons why this first referendum failed. Anything you'd like to add?
Being new to the district is trying to get a handle on our communities and what is important to those communities. And as all of you know, sensitivity issues are anytime that a school district feels that they're going to lose a school, and in this case, there was no accommodations going to be made to keep the center at Peterson open. And as Mr. Netchie clearly pointed out, that's one of the things that they have learned from that experience. And now, even though we haven't decided on the grade configuration, we do feel that the Peterson Center is going to be a viable part of our school district.
All right. Thank you very much. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Council. Have we ever exceeded the cooperative grant limit?
Mr. Stump.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, the language in the program that was modified last year allows a grant for new construction of up to the lesser of $20 million or 75% of the project cost.
Yeah. Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Shumper is my seatmate on the House floor, so as you might imagine, I've definitely been sensitized about the flood and the pain, and I'm really sympathetic. My question is, can you tell us what portion of the school complex pre-flood was constructed in 1906 versus those percentages of the complex that were added on in 36 and 57?
Yes, I can. And if you want to take a look at your very back page here, it's probably easier to look at that. As you look at that structure,
anything with the limestone front on it, and there's two sections. One has the large roof area on it, and then the other area has the lower roof. The large roof area was constructed in 1906, and then the other addition there was 1936. And on the back side, all you can see is the top of the roof, but that's our elementary building as well.
Can you help me out a little bit more? Is the total school constructed in 36 50% of the complex, or?
Superintendent Daly.
Okay.
30% or?
Okay. The 1906 complex represents about two thirds of our usage right now for our students.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And then Superintendent Ehlers or Mr. Nesky, could you tell me also, when you fixed up the school and got it ready for the first day of school, which was a Herculean effort, and we all sympathize greatly with what you've been through, did you get FEMA money, and how did that work, and what was that used towards? Did you consider trying to get the school replacement from them, or wasn't that something they would consider?
Initially, that was not an option they would consider. And as far as our FEMA funds, we received a check 10 days ago for our first installment, which was $109,000. Currently, our estimate is that the replacement and reconstruction is going to exceed $711,000 for our school district.
Thank you. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, do you know, in the event of a school construction, does the school district qualify for debt service equalization or not?
I'm going to
he was ready for
allow
it,
Gary to answer that question for us today. Gary.
Okay, which Gary do we have? Gary Olson or Gary Denson?
We have Gary Olson.
Welcome, Mr. Olson.
Gary Olson.
We need to get you to sit down because this is taped and it won't pick up if you're not in a seated position. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and if you could restate your name and your title for the
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Olson, financial advisor with Ehlers and Associates, who are the financial advisors for the district. In calculating the tax impact that you see on that page, on the 20-year issue at $25 million, the annual payments are just over $2 million a year. Of that, the state debt equalization aid would be only about $160,000.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and I attempted to ask Mr. Strom this because he probably knows the answer off the top of his head. I was going to ask what the adjusted net tax capacity on a per pupil basis is for the school district, but I won't ask that question.
Representative Garofalo, we're so glad you're nice today.
So he said $160,000 and $2 million. I'm just doing the math in my head, trying to see.
Basically, what happens is, the first 25% of adjusting that tax capacity is going to be coming out of local levy. That's about 60% of the payment, or about $1.2 million. That leaves about 40% left, about $800,000. Of that $800,000, because of their ANTC per pupil unit, comparing it to that equalizing factor, they qualify for about 19% of that. So if you take roughly 20% of $800,000, that's how you get $160,000. So you're essentially getting 20% on 40%, so you're getting about 8% of the bill paid for by the
representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was trying to do the numbers in my head, but you just did it for me. But I was trying to figure out that on a per pupil basis, are those tax capacity numbers adjusted after the flood? Because I would think that with a low student count and with low property wealth, which I would assume it's difficult to get lower property wealth than after you've had an area wiped out by a flood, have those numbers been revised? Or
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the numbers for P09, the ANTC, is based on 2007, which is essentially not been adjusted for the flood yet. We talked to the county this fall, and they were in the process of going to go back through and survey everything and try and get a good handle on what was happening to values in the city of Rushford, but they didn't have good numbers on it yet, so we really don't have a good handle on what's going to happen. What would happen if values come in lower, they might qualify for a little more aid, But it's hard to know exactly what that, how that would work out.
And Madam Chair, this is my final comment. Just,
Representative
just to represent Trump for perhaps an alternative strategy here. But this seems like a pretty reasonable case for why the ANCC numbers should be adjusted and be under existing law if they just were reporting the right numbers. I would think, and I'm trying to do the numbers in my head here, but the debt service equalization would be substantially higher, especially in that second tier. But if we were reporting the right numbers, it's not no one at the school district's fault, just that I don't know what the current policy provisions are. Maybe if there was some sort of way to apply the more accurate numbers to the situation, it would be a good idea. Just a suggestion, just an idea.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. There are no other questions. Anybody, Representative Shumpert, do you have a final statement, or are you good?
Well, you know, the school district is obviously going to lose some tax capacity because of the flood. They've lost a few students, I think 13, 19. You know, it's not a very wealthy school district to start with. And, you know, our biggest concern is that, you know, we're trying very hard to get the business community going. We're trying very hard to hold on to the homeowners. We're not going to hang on to the homeowners unless we have a good school district.
Yep.
And I think it would have been a hard pitch to pass a referendum prior to the flood, and it's going to be a little bit difficult, or more difficult after the flood. So that's why we're making this request, to be honest. I think the 75% comes to about $18 million. I assume you all had a copy of the mm-hmm. breakdown of their thing. I think the 75% is about $18 or $19 million. So.
Correct.
This was recommended to us as an alternative way to go to try to come up with a new school. So. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Shumpert, and all the testifiers.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for your time this afternoon. It's a pleasure to ask for you to invest in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. And House File 3118 will be laid over for inclusion in the HL bonding recommendation. And our final bill is Representative Saylor, who I saw here a minute ago. Is she still here? Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Saylor is here. Welcome to the committee. And I'll move House File 3178 for inclusion in the KHL bonding recommendation. Welcome, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Happy to be here today. I'm bringing this forward because a number of schools in my district and in other conversations around the state have brought up the need that they have and the desire for addressing their energy needs and yet having, you know, they're wanting to save money on energy costs and yet they are just actually quite stymied with coming up with enough money to do that. So they want to look at some of the new renewable projects, but the beginning startup money for the design has not been something that they can readily come up with. And so the proposal here today is to appropriate $5 million from the bond proceeds for the Commissioner of Commerce to administer in designing renewable energy projects for K-12 schools, which will allow these schools to have access at least to the design process of getting started with looking at a renewable energy alternative for their school. Additionally, beyond saving money on energy costs, which is the primary piece, there's also the component of learning. And I can bring up a few examples. And one, I will just start with in the Park Rapids School District, that district worked very hard for the past about 2 years to put in a wind generator, which is a very small scale, but they put one in, and the struggles that the school went through with this group of people and the superintendent who was not former Rather, he was the former superintendent and now on the school board. He was not able to come down today to testify. Sends his regards. But at any rate, they went through a lot of trouble just trying to come up with the design. How do they come up with what they need? What are their needs? Making those initial assessments, the preliminary work. And listening to them and having them come to me many times and saying, you know, what can we do? How can we get help? That really was the seed for this bill. But what they have done now is they put up a small generator. They got it going really little, and it is providing a learning tool. It's providing about four houses worth of energy, which is by no means, you know, going to solve all their problems. The reason that they couldn't do that there was because of airport zoning. So it had nothing to do with the school, nothing to do with anything else than some zoning. But that was one of the pieces that needed to be looked into that was sort of problematic for them. However, they do have the learning tool working at this point, and wanted to make sure that you knew that these things actually do work, but they take a lot of work to get going. Also, I do have two testifiers here today, and I would like to introduce them and have them share their expertise. They are with, Doug Saul is with the St. Anthony New Brighton School. And this school district took it upon itself to put up a solar wall to help their district save money. And that wall is up and functioning now. Apparently they did a presentation at the school board conference, which was about 2 weeks ago, I believe. I don't know if some of you maybe were able to attend that or not. You may have seen their presentation. But
and represent Thaler, yes. That's one of the school districts that I represent, and some of us legislators got to hear a little bit about it when we were there at a school board meeting last month. So it's very nice that you included my district.
And I didn't even plan it. I didn't. Anyway, and the other person is Bernie Eichmeyer, and he is the program manager with McKinsey, which is the company that did the design work for this school, and can give us much more technical information on how some of these things work and an example. And so, with no further ado, I would like to turn it over to Bernie Eichmeyer right now for comments about designing.
Thank you. Mr. Eichmeyer, if you could restate your name and your title for the tape.
Bernie Eichmeyer, Program Manager, McKinsey Company. Madam Chair, members, I'm very pleased to be here today, and I can reiterate what the representative stated about this not being a hand-picked one for your district. This solar wall was the first one in the state of Minnesota to be installed. My compliments to the school board of St. Anthony New Brighton School. They took it upon themselves to instruct our organization and other organizations they were looking at to pursue other activities in their energy profile to look at all of the opportunities to use alternative sustainable energy for satisfying schools' energy appetite. We evaluated the potential for wind, for geothermal, for solar hot water application, for solar PV application. The only one that made good economic sense, was viable and affordable, was the solar wall. And we approached it with a great deal of skepticism because there's been a great deal of solar and alternative activity out there that hasn't met the grade, hasn't paid for itself, hasn't met the criteria for good, sound engineering application. Myself, I was very skeptical about this application. We were less than enthusiastic with the New Brighton St. Anthony School Board, but they insisted that we proceed. We installed this solar wall, manufactured in Canada, very simple device, works very well when the sun shines, which is coincidental when students are in the building, but is only working now for the heating season, and that's one of the limitations we have to be concerned with. But when we put this solar wall in, we added instrumentation, digital control that would allow us to track its performance and then allow us to share this data with the science classrooms, the math classrooms, the pre-engineering organizations as part of their curriculum. And I got one of the surprises of my life on a late November day when this unit had been online for about a week. It was 6 degrees outside. The air handling units that were drawing ventilation air for classrooms through this solar wall required no additional heat input from our mechanical systems. I didn't expect to see that. Our engineering said maybe from 20 degrees and above it would work very well. It's satisfying the heating demand for this set of classrooms right down to 5 or 6 degrees above zero, which is remarkable. So what I'm here to tell you is that as this technology is developed and is applied, we're learning ways to make it perform better to accomplish our goals and also accomplish the goals of the schools where we're able to apply these. The first mission is education and development of our future, particularly in my case, engineers, who will look at this technology, will use this data and say, what if, and bring better solutions to tomorrow's engineering design. And that's what I'm asking you to consider, is supporting this legislation so that we can develop that next set of data, that next set of engineering ideas that will make things perform better.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Stahl, you could state your name and your title for the...
My name's Doug Stahl. I'm the Director of Buildings and Grounds for St. Anthony. And I guess I can just reiterate what Bernie just talked about. Our board and our superintendent were pretty key on getting the idea of something that the public or our school members or anybody driving down 33rd Avenue, which happens to be the front of our building. Our solar wall is right on the front of the building up above, so everybody can see it when they're going by. It's a pretty simple device. It hooks up to two of our bigger air handlers. And the neat thing is that we have three bigger handlers up there. One of them draws the outside air the way that they normally used to draw it. And two of them draw it off the solar wall. And when you punch it up on the computer, you can see the heating valves on a cold day such as today. Our fourth level heating valve would be producing about 100% heat from our boiler plant to try to heat that air. The other two will be down as low as 5 or 10% or even nothing. So we're getting tremendous gains off of that wall, a lot more than advertised, as Mr. Eichemeyer stated. So what I'm here to tell you is that this system is very simple. It's either on or off. Above 55 degrees, it's off. Below it, it's on. And it produces tremendous gains. So this would be a great way or a great bill to get schools thinking about this type of thing. It's just it's a very good deal. Thank you
very much. I know the school board was very proud of themselves when we were there. They had pushed for this and that they were actually saving money. And last week I met with Representative Wolfweiger and three or four of her superintendents, and I'm sorry to say I can't remember which district it was, but it was the superintendent to my left anyway who said they did something energy efficient and they had recouped their costs in 8 years and now they're making money after what they did. So considering the hard times that schools are on, it seems like this kind of investment will probably see a lot more of it. So I appreciate this bill. Any questions from members? Representative Benson.
Just a very quick, could you give a very brief description of a solar wall? I'm sure I'm supposed to know.
Mr. Eichmeyer.
I apologize. Yes, Madam Chair, Member, and Representative, all this solar wall is a very dark panel that's perforated. It has a lot of little holes in its face. It is completely sealed on all four edges so that any air coming into that air handler has to come through that wall. The front plate, the steel part of it, collects the solar energy. As the air passes through the perforation, it collects the heat from that skin. Very simple.
It's horizontal. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Is it horizontal? Is it separate from the building or is it attached to the building?
Fire.
Madam Chair, Representative, it is anchored to the face of the south wall of the mechanical room that houses the air handlers. And the air comes through it directly and is transferred laterally between the solar wall itself and the face of the building to the air intake for the air handler.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
I don't know, Madam Chair, maybe this question is for you. So what this 3178 would do is take $5 million of bonding, put it in an energy fund in the Department of Commerce, and then school districts could apply to that pot of money for these kinds of projects. Am I reading that correctly, or...
Representative Erickson, that's how I'm reading it, but I certainly didn't draft the bill, so maybe we should ask the bill author.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Taylor.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, yes, that is correct. Because it's the intent of this bill to allow for statewide, for all of the schools, and, you know, without, we couldn't find any other mechanism for making it available for all of the schools. And that is the intent, that it's for everyone. Thank you.
Representative
McCullough. Madam Chair, just a point of clarification for Mr. Salt. The solar wall that was installed in your building or at your school, how much did it cost and how was it funded?
Actually, our solar wall was part of an energy efficiency contract with McKinsey Energy, so it was part of a whole series of changing out all of our light bulbs and changing the boiler room over, and it was just part of it. So it's actually a mechanism where we have a little upfront cost, but it pays for itself. It has a, I don't know, what's the lifespan?
Representative, we calculated the payback on this solar wall to be in the area of 12 years. It appears that it's going to pay for itself in about 8 now. Our overall costs, our individual costs of the wall itself, its installation, and the bypass we had to build because we don't want to bring that air through the wall in the summertime, was in the area of $75,000. It's going to save between $7,000 and $10,000 a year in energy costs.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure if it's more Representative Taylor or Representative gentlemen here testifying with you, Representative Taylor. See, I appreciate how you tried to how you brought a focus of this bill to school districts all across the state. It's a good incentive. My question is why you chose these particular renewable energies. If you have some research behind them, I'm curious. I mean, I'm actually doing some work with hydrogen cells myself, and quite amazed at how many different options are now out there and how fast they're coming online. And I actually feel a concern that yes, on one hand we need to make sure they're truly renewable energy sources and that they are in fact efficient before we start putting money into them, but I think there are possibly others out there. And I'm just curious how you came to these particular technologies put in the bill.
Representative Taylor.
Madam Chair and Representative Olson, that is a very good question. The reason that we chose these particular mechanisms is that they have been tested, they have more of a track record. It certainly wasn't to say that there aren't other opportunities out there, but we just didn't feel at this point that those had reached the level of testing, and also, you know, we're at a point where we wanted to have them open to this particular project. But the others all have, you know, they've been defined in state statutes and have had a number of applications throughout the state of various sizes. So we thought that, you know, based on the track record of those, that was why. It wasn't to say that there aren't others out there, because there are, and hopefully in the future those would be included, but not at this time.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up. I appreciate that, Representative Taylor. I'm just curious if you, by chance, looked at the farm in Representative Erickson's district, the Hobbenfeld Farm, because that seems to have a good record. We've put additional support into that through the University of Minnesota. They're working with, I think, fuel cells.
Yeah.
Given the rural concerns of a lot of our school districts and where there's a lot of farms like that, that actually might be, I'm curious if you looked at it, because that actually might be one that does have a record that maybe was overlooked.
Madam Chair and Representative, actually I have toured that facility, so I have been on site there and I have been very impressed with that. I just didn't think that that had as many applications with schools around the state, you know. But that it wasn't, again, one of the major technologies that we usually discuss with regard to this with schools. I just didn't think that it would apply as well, but it is certainly a good technology and is one that could be looked at. I just didn't think it would help as much with schools.
Madam
Chair, and to the testifier in the middle, I apologize. What was the name of your company?
You were Kids Resource.
Like just coughing.
Representative, the name of the company is McKinstry Company.
Okay. Are they publicly traded?
They are not.
Always looking for a good investment. Sorry. But it's really neat how, I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
That's
just, you know, one of the, I mean, I think we're all concerned about high energy prices, but one of the neat side effects of it is that we're seeing just an explosion of R&D in the area of market-based solutions, either in terms of just helping cars get around quicker, or helping heat or cool homes. And it's just really neat to hear about this stuff when it works, because there are those products out there that only have an ROI of 25, 30 years, and they're really not practical. It's really nice when you see products like this that come to market that work. And I think we're going to see that continuing development now. As Google gets into it now, and billions of dollars of R&D coming in. There's some neat products out there. So thanks.
Madam Chair and Mr. Representative, thank you. I might share that this effort spawned our being contacted by Minnesota Residential Environmental Learning Center. We have a significant relationship with the K-12 industry here in Minnesota, and they've asked for exactly what you've described, the emerging technologies, development of experimental and applicable energy-saving options that go toward a zero carbon footprint. And it's a very exciting industry right now, a very exciting time to be in it. I think it will yield some very positive results.
I have always wished that I could get on the Environment Committee, and it's always met right when the Education Committee meets. And I think there's a lot of us that feel that way, because we're happy to have this topic. We have a leisurely schedule, and so I'm going to take one more question. Representative Zetmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Saylor. Is this a one-time appropriation, you see, or just a one-time?
Representative Saylor.
Madam Chair, yes, I do see this as, you know, it's hopefully this is enough to get schools up and going. And generally speaking, once you get technologies out there, the costs do go down. But I just know there's such a barrier to schools to getting started with this sort of thing. And schools need to move quickly to solve a lot of their financial concerns. And so at any rate, to answer your question, yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, members, for all your good questions. And Representative Saylor, this will go quite a way since you're leaving it, is that right, at just designing all these projects, Representative Saylor?
And sir, that is correct.
Thank you very much. So that'll really mean that a lot of districts could share in the wealth of this bill. So thank you. Any closing statements, Representative Saylor?
Well, Madam Chair and members, I just thank you all for your attention on this, and I'm really pleased that we could bring some environmental opportunities to the Education Committee. At any rate, I think we have so much synergy, really, between education and energy and environment opportunities, so it's good when we're able to work together on these. I thank you for your attention and your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the testifiers as well.
Thank you.
And House File 3178 will be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus K-12 bonding recommendation. Members, before we get to the looking at what we have and voting, I just want to point out that there were some concerns by Representative Erickson and actually myself, too, by the time we got done with looking at the bill that I had at the last meeting, I think, House File 2744, which we've included in your packet in the last green folder. And just so you can look at it, there's an amendment that will be in our bill tomorrow that I will narrow it down. And so I just wanted to put it in there so people could consider it and see if that takes care of your concerns and or if you have others to bring forth tomorrow. So that is there. And then before we go for voting, Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, we have the list of all the projects in here. I don't know if you want to briefly refresh our memories or just stand for questions if people have questions. Okay, before we vote, And the, are the voting in there too? I don't seem to have it. Oh, they're right here. Okay. We'll pass these out. They'll keep you on your honor to only take one. If you could turn them in to Liz or Shannon when you're done. Yeah. Oh, we can send some for the other way. But does anyone have questions of Mr. Stroud or Mr. Crow? Otherwise, we'll adjourn the meeting. You can vote and go. Any questions? Okay, last call then. Please vote before you go, and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.